out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, January the 24th, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live at radioarian.com because we have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson with us from rushjournal.org and the Orthodox Nationalist. Matt, how are you doing today?
Yeah, you know, I've been better, you know, but I think what we're talking about today may put me in slightly better spirits.
Well, it's certainly an interesting topic. It's not one that I really know that much about. We're going to be talking about the coup that's going off in Venezuela. And I can't be alone in thinking this. I mean, my overall impression is really that Maduro and Chavez, they were both sort of some variation of communists. But this new guy, Guido, that's being put up as the rightful leader, I mean, he just seems to be an oligarch. It just seems to be false to me, as if both of them are false. So I'm not really sure which side to take. I know that you know a lot more about it than me. Do you want to say anything about that before we start getting into these quotes that you've pulled up for me, Matt?
Well, yeah, let's be very clear. You have to define what a communist is. I call anyone a communist who's a Leninist or a Maoist. A follower of Marx in a strict way. Chavez's government gave land to peasants, gave, you know, control over industry to some worker councils. Communist governments, Leninist governments have never done this. Leninist governments are completely opposed to private property in land for the peasantry. And so they can't be a communist in the Leninist sense. For creating this yeoman class of farmers that Chavez created back in 08-09. Chavez and Maduro are national socialists, which is a very common ideology in the third world because they believe in some kind of egalitarianism, but they're also nationalists. You know, they're very concerned with, and in fact, Chavez and Maduro are obsessed with national sovereignty, which is what's upset the U.S. so much. So as far as I can see, they're national socialists for being socialists in certain aspects of the economy, certainly not Leninists, but also strong nationalists. And, you know, it's easy to prove. They're, you know, the army backs Chavez and Maduro, and they back them on the grounds of national sovereignty. That's not exactly a communist point of view.
Well, they certainly seem to be very patriotic. I mean, they're wearing the country's flag. They've got the flag everywhere. I mean, that's the one thing that struck me was that they were wearing tracksuits that were made out of the country's flag. It doesn't seem as if they're internationalists. But what would you say to leftists who were to say, oh, yes, but communism wasn't done right before and Chavez is doing communism the right way? What would you say to that?
I would say that they'd never read Marx before. Because Marx certainly was opposed to a yeoman farmer class. I have a paper coming out very soon. In fact, I have a book coming out in the Barnes Review very soon on revisionist essays on the Soviet Union, dealing with what Marx said about the peasantry. Private property in the peasant hands was a terrible idea for Marx because it created an anti-communist peasantry. And he hated them to begin with. You know, you can't possibly say that Lenin didn't know what Marxism was. He was an expert. And you can't say that any time your ideological preference goes wrong, it must be the fault of the idiots who controlled it. I mean, if Marxism is so delicate that so many hundreds of people got it wrong, then it's probably a terrible ideology to hold. And if someone were to say that to me, if they were to say, oh, well, the Soviet Union wasn't real Marxism, I said, okay, the U.S. isn't real capitalism. You know, it's a stupid thing to say. It's And Karl Marx didn't believe in nationalism. He vehemently opposed it, as of course did Lenin and Stalin and everybody else. So this isn't what they meant. There's been no violent overthrow of the capitalist class, which is a part of Marxist ideology. So I would say that take a few years and read Marx, then get back to me.
I think you've raised a lot of very good points there, and any leftists that are supportive of Chavez and Maduro, then they should really take a look at National Socialism. I mean, that's what you're saying there, isn't it, Matt? That they should really be supportive of National Socialism and not Marxism and Communism. Well, let's get into this first quote here, and this one actually comes from back in August last year. The South American state of Venezuela is in deep trouble. The country, which was once hailed by many on the Western left as a shining example of socialism in action, is crumbling, both economically and politically. The scale of the country's fall can be seen in cold, hard data, some of which is truly shocking. In 2017, Venezuela's economy is 35% smaller than it was in 2013 in terms of gross domestic product, and 40% lower in GDP per capita terms, as noted by Harvard economist Ricardo Hausmann, who was the country's Minister of Planning in the early 1990s in a piece for Project Syndicate. That's where this quote's been taken from. Hausmann reflected on the scale of the contraction in a recent article for Project Syndicate, writing that the shrinking was a significantly sharper contraction than during the 1929 to 1933 Great Depression in the United States, when US GDP is estimated to have fallen 28%. He continued, "It is slightly bigger than the decline in Russia, 1990 to 1994, Cuba, 1989 to 1993, and Albania, 1989 to 1993. Beyond the headline numbers, things are even more stark." Here is Hausmann once again. "Clearly, a 40% decline in per capita GDP is a very rare event, but several factors make the situation in Venezuela even bleaker. For starters, while Venezuela's GDP contraction in constant prices from 2013 to 2017 includes a 17% decline in oil production, it excludes the 55% plunge in oil prices during that period. Oil exports fell by $2,200 per capita from 2012 to 2016, of which $1,500 was due to the decline in oil prices." So what was the cause of all this, Matt? Because Venezuela it should be a very rich country because it has all this oil. Because from where I'm looking at it, it looks like, well, we've got this socialist government, and they've ended up actually being in a worse state than America was during the Great Depression. So what's the real cause of this, and what's the background to this situation that Venezuela is in?
Well, remember, under Chavez, the economy was booming. The poverty rate was cut in half. GDP per capita went through the roof. I mean, you're talking about 10% a year. Now, a lot of lazy economists and writers say that this has to do with oil prices. They say that with Russia all the time. Well, in terms of GDP, 7% of the Russian economy is based on oil. For Venezuela, it's something like 18%. Now, when it comes to exports, that's another matter. But the only person who buys oil from Venezuela is the U.S. The last few years, the U.S. has put sanctions on every part of the Venezuelan economy, has frozen all their foreign accounts, has frozen any account of theirs that's denominated in dollars. And not only that, but has said that any country doing business with any corporation connected with Venezuela will get the same treatment. Therefore, the only countries trading with Venezuela right now are China and Russia, Belarus, you know, these countries that are already under sanctions. But Russia is not an important part of the Venezuelan economy, although over the last few years, obviously it is. The U.S. has done everything it can. It's poured about $20 million over the last few years into the so-called opposition. This has a lot to do with the decline, the collapse of confidence. I'm not sure. Now, the comparison with Russia in the 90s, well, he's only referring to 1 year here. And yet the Russian decline is from 1991 to 1997. And even Albania, the same thing. So I think it's a lopsided comparison. I don't know how much it's collapsed by, 35%. The World Bank says it's something more like 20%. I just saw it before I came on the air. So it's still a massive collapse. And it has to do with the fact that no one can do business with that country, and that every account of any corporation, state-owned or otherwise, has been frozen abroad if it's in dollars. So, you know, it's taken what would have been a minor setback and turned it into a major crisis.
So America has really been strangling the country. And what's the reason for that? Because they say, oh, it's his socialist policies. He's mistreating his people. He's starving his people. I mean, what's the real reason for it? What reason does America give? And what's the actual real reason for the sanctions being put on them?
Well, the official reason, of course, is that the elections of 2013 and all subsequent elections are invalid. The U.S. complains about election meddling and yet has demanded the overthrow of this guy. The opposition, as I've told you, has created this national front. I forget the name off the top of my head, Democratic Alliance or something like that, which has a large number of parties from communists to neoliberals. The only way that that would come together is if the U.S. put it together. They did that in Ukraine in the late 90s, and afterwards they're doing it now in Venezuela. So, yeah, the official reason is that this man hasn't won an election validly. And yet the real reason is that he, like so many military men, Chavez nationalized the oil industry. And now Maduro has pissed them off even more by creating a new currency, the Petro, that's government controlled, and it's really a virtual currency that's backed by the oil wealth of the country. So that's the real reason versus the official reason.
Well, that sounds very similar to what happened in Libya. Gaddafi nationalized the oil industry, and then he was going to bring out the gold dinar and start financing the African banks. And then straight after that, there was the uprising, and he was called a dictator, and they toppled him. And again, they basically said, well, we're going to recognize the Libyan opposition as the official government of Libya. They tried that with Syria as well. They said, we're going to recognize the official opposition as the official government of Syria, but it didn't work in Syria. And they're trying the same game plan here. But just before we get into America's response directly to what's going on here, just before this happened, there was a big deal done between Caracas and Moscow. And I'm wondering if this may have something to do with the timing of this coup. Caracas and Moscow have signed $5 billion worth of contracts related to oil production during President Nicolas Maduro's visit to Russia. Maduro tweeted a day after meeting with President Vladimir Putin. Maduro announced the deal on Twitter, thanking Putin and the people of Russia. Contracts have been signed to guarantee investments for $5 billion to increase oil production with Russian partners of joint ventures, Maduro said. In addition, an investment of more than $1 million was agreed for mining production in Venezuela, mainly of gold, according to Maduro, who has been on an official state visit to Moscow since Tuesday. Russia and Venezuela run many joint projects in the energy, agricultural, geological, pharmaceutical, technology, and defense sectors. Russia's investment in Venezuela exceeds $4 billion, according to TASS. Do you think Russia was thinking of doing even more deals with Venezuela? And could this have affected the timing of this? Do you think that America was saying, well, we're not having this. We put you under sanction. You're certainly not going to start doing deals with Russia, because then the sanctions won't be of any effect. And also, what has been Russia's response to this, Matt?
Well, as the United States has ringed Russia with enemies, the Russian Federation has responded. And part of the response is Venezuela. Now, technically, the sanctions on Russia say that any country or any corporation doing business with the Federation will be placed under the same sanctions. So this would have happened anyway, regardless of who was running the country. But of course, it was one of Washington's handpicked men, like this Guido character who comes out of absolutely nowhere. He wouldn't have accepted this assistance in the first place. This is Russia's attempt to prop them up. It's the only economic the trading that Venezuela is allowed to do. Obviously, no one's allowed to accept this new currency. And yeah, it's just the working of two allies against American interests. And mining gold in Venezuela, of course, has everything to do with Russia's current drive to get rid of the dollar. So from the CIA's point of view, this is a huge security threat to the United States and the American economy, because Russia now is one of the world's greatest owners of gold. I mean, they have tons of it in Moscow. So if the dollar collapses, gold may be the de facto measure, in which case Russia will be a dominant power. It just shows you the brilliance of how Putin operates. So so that's the story there. It's no surprise. And the Russians have an air base there. So if the U.S. wants to do anything militarily, they're going to have their hands full.
How well equipped is that air base? I mean, is it a military base? Is it just somewhere where the Russia can land planes? Or I mean, if they've got an actual military base there, is that more than they actually had in Syria? Tell me more about the military side of this, Matt.
It's a civilian base with military planes. So it's sort of a hybrid base, the last I've read. Now, my reading may be out of date, but they do have jets there. They do have MiGs there, last I checked. And part of that, now that's been there for a few years. I think that was there under Chavez, because there is tremendous military cooperation between the two countries. And the military, the Venezuelan military, is very well equipped with Russian and Chinese equipment. So the U.S. really can't do anything militarily down there without picking a fight with Russia. I don't believe there's any infantry there. Don't quote me on that, but I don't believe there's any infantry there. There are a few MiGs down there, though, last I checked.
So they're really, they need to be really careful about this. I would have thought that Venezuela would have been okay with just doing deals with Russia and China, and it wouldn't matter so much that America was putting sanctions on them anyway. If you think of the amount of trade and business that Russia and China are responsible for, I think part of that is it must have really put America's nose out of joint, the fact that these sanctions could end up actually being of no use eventually if this business relationship had continued. Well, I've got another quote here, which is BBC explaining everything that's happened, and I'd like to get your view on what you think of their explanation of it at the end of it. And they say, on January the 23rd, the leader of the legislature, Juan Guaido, the president of the National Assembly, declared himself acting president and said he would assume the powers of the executive branch from there onwards. The move was a direct challenge to the power of President Nicolas Maduro, who had been sworn in to a second six-year term in office just 2 weeks previously. Mr. Maduro was re-elected to a second six-year term in highly controversial elections in May 2018, which most opposition parties boycotted. Many opposition candidates had been barred from running, while others had been jailed or had fled the country for fear of being imprisoned, and the opposition parties argued that the poll would be neither free nor fair. Mr. Maduro's re-election was not recognized by Venezuela's opposition-controlled National Assembly, citing Articles 233 and 333 of Venezuela's constitution. The legislature says that in such cases, the head of the National Assembly takes over as acting president. That is why Mr. Guaido declared himself acting president on the 23rd of January. So it does seem that he's actually citing the constitution here, and this seems to be resting on the fact that these elections weren't actually free and opposition parties weren't allowed to take part. But we've heard this before about Russia, and these people that weren't allowed to take part were criminals that had actually been jailed. And it's against Russian law for criminals that have been jailed to stand for election. So it could be this. I mean, what do you know about this, Matt? What about these opposition parties that weren't allowed to actually take part? Because if they weren't allowed to take part, then, you know, this Guaido is actually in the right by bringing out these articles from the Constitution.
They boycotted the election. Now, I've always been very suspicious of any party that boycotts an election. I mean, if you could win, you wouldn't boycott it. Now, in April of 2002, the so-called opposition staged a coup with Pedro Astanga. He declared himself president, and he revoked the 1999 constitution and all the laws that Chavez had passed, and he dissolved the Supreme Court, the Attorney General, and everybody else. So whenever anyone quotes a technicality like a constitution, a very new constitution, get suspicious. That's not what this is about. This is an emergency situation. If all they have is a technical argument, then it's very, very weak. Now, they keep saying that the opposition controls the assembly, but the United Socialist Party controls 55 out of 167 seats. The third largest party is an ally of his with 25 seats. But this Guaido, I think it's Guaido rather than Guido, is a member of the Popular Will Party that has 14 seats in 167 seat legislature. How popular can this guy be? See, they, in legislative elections, like in Chile when Allende was overthrown, they don't have runoffs. So, this man won his seat with 26.1% of the vote. So not only did this man really not get elected to anything with a very, you know, small percentage, but his party is extremely unpopular. And why would this man with no, I mean, out of nowhere, that very few people have ever heard of the guy down there, declare himself president? Now remember, he got his master's degree at George Washington University in D.C. He speaks English fluently. While at George Washington, there's no doubt he was contacted by the CIA. And this man is awash in cash. This tiny little party that he's a part of, this man comes from absolutely out of nowhere, unpopular party, unpopular politician, and he declares himself president? Don't you think it would be a major figure to do this? The fact that the guy speaks perfect English and was educated in the United States should tell you a lot. He's clearly an oligarch. And his party, the Popular Will, is your classic neoliberal party. So it's utter nonsense. But the left has attempted to overthrow Chavez. They've attempted, the neoliberals, I should say. Using left and right outside of America is weird, but have attempted to overthrow Chavez many times. And violated the Constitution in every possible way. And in fact, when people like Carmona took over, Pedro Carmona, in 99, he revoked the Constitution entirely. So that's a very, very weak argument from their point of view.
It's the neocons that are pushing for this, isn't it? And the neocons, before they were neocons, they were Trotskyites. So this guy Guaido, he doesn't even have a majority, and he's effectively in, I guess, something similar to Congress. I mean, it does look parallel to the situation that we have in America at the moment, where you've got Congress refusing to go along with Donald Trump, saying they want to impeach him, he's not my president, and all this sort of nonsense. And then you've got the American president there. But at least people acknowledge the fact that Donald Trump did get the votes, and he did win. I mean, how would America like it if the rest of the world said, right, well, we're going to recognize Nancy Pelosi as the president? And nobody would stand for it. And yet,
it would have to be some obscure congressman who lost the race from North Dakota. He's declared the new president. It can't even be Pelosi, because this guy's an absolute nobody.
Well, U.S. President Donald Trump has recognized Venezuela's opposition leader, Juan Guaido, as interim president in a provocative move against the elected government of Nicolas Maduro. Today, I am officially recognizing the president of the Venezuelan National Assembly, Juan Guaido, as the interim president of Venezuela, Trump said in a statement. He called the Maduro government illegitimate and directly responsible for any threats posed to the Venezuelan people. He added he would use the full weight of United States economic and diplomatic power to press for the restoration of Venezuelan democracy, and encouraged other governments in the Western Hemisphere to also recognize Guaido. So what does he mean by the full weight of United States economic and diplomatic power? I mean, hasn't he already been doing that? Isn't the country already under heavy sanctions? What else can he do? I mean, it just seems to me that what they're doing is that they're funding this guy and they're funding the uprising. That's really what the full weight of United States diplomatic power is. It's not nothing else, I don't think.
Well, keep in mind that this Guaido was just installed as the Speaker of the Assembly. That had to have been from the U.S. because this guy was just elected with, as I said, 26% of the vote. And then they make him the president of the assembly. this doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And they make him president of the assembly from a party that has 14 seats out of 167 seat assembly. That's very weird. You know, so obviously the U.S. is involved here. And you're right. That's what the full weight means. The difference between sanctions on places like Russia or Belarus and sanctions on Venezuela is that they're going to bite in Venezuela because, you know, 90% of their oil, I'm sorry, 90% of their exports are oil. The GDP or domestic product is, you know, based on a lot of other things, but their exports are oil based. And the U.S. is their number one trading partner. And so when the U.S. shuts off that trading relationship, it really hurts. And that's going to hurt every aspect of the economy. So that's the big difference between sanctions here in Russia and versus sanctions on Venezuela.
When was it that Guaido actually got voted in? How far back was that? Because is this the first thing that he's done since he was voted in? And if his party was voted in, when did he actually get voted to president of the National Congress?
Well, the president thing is recent. I think he's a new politician. I don't think he's been in politics very long at all. I think he's only been elected once. And that's what makes it strange. This guy comes from out of nowhere. You know, in the tiniest party that actually matters. Now, the members of this coalition come from everywhere. You have the Communist Party. The Trotskyite movement is there. You have neoliberals. So here you have, again, the capitalists and communists working hand in hand to get rid of their mutual enemy, a national socialist government. Now, remember, Maduro is no Chavez. There's no question about it. But he's trying to, with much less money and with no support from outside the country, trying to continue his policy. But this is simply impossible. Because, again, American sanctions mean a lot in Venezuela. They mean nothing in Moscow.
Well, the European Union has got in on this as well. They've sided with quote-unquote democratic forces in Venezuela, backing the self-proclaimed president Juan Guaido over the elected government of Nicolas Maduro. Unlike Maduro, the parliamentary assembly, including Juan Guaido, have a democratic mandate from Venezuelan citizens, President of the European Council Donald Tusk tweeted on Wednesday evening, urging all of Europe to support democratic forces in Venezuela. How can they say democratic forces and self-proclaimed president in the same sentence? Surely a self-proclaimed president is a dictator, isn't he, Matt?
This guy's been elected to nothing except an obscure district with a handful of votes and is a member of one of the smallest parties. The legislature, the biggest party in the legislature is Maduro's party. It's Chavez's party, the party he founded. They have 55 seats. It's the biggest by far. Their opposition is a distant second, but the popular will is way down there. So, you know, the only way that this cobbling together of groups that have nothing in common can happen is through external force. So, yeah, a self-proclaimed president, you know, this obscure guy, I don't get it. It has to be foreign influence, and he must be trustworthy. He knows D.C. He speaks English. He's really the perfect guy. But God, the Maduro's making fun of him, saying everyone's going to be wondering who the heck this guy is. He is not a household name in the country.
Well, let's have a look at how Maduro is responding to this. Venezuela's President Nicolas Maduro said Caracas is breaking off diplomatic relations with the U.S., giving American diplomats 72 hours to leave the country after Donald Trump recognized the opposition leader as interim head. Maduro announced the move to a large crowd of cheering supporters from a balcony of the presidential Miraflores Palace in Caracas shortly after the US and then several Latin American countries decided to recognize the opposition leader Juan Guaido as Venezuela's interim president. And as I said before, this is very similar to what happened in Syria and Libya. But what about these other several Latin American countries, Matt? They seem to be supporting Guaido. What's going on there?
As far as I know, places like Ecuador have neocons in power. It's, you know, if I were running one of these countries, it would be really tough for me to say no to the U.S. because for all these things that these countries export, the Americans are the biggest buyer. You know, it's very different in Eastern Europe than it is in Latin America. The U.S. dominates it to such an extent that even if they're not, you know, nationalist governments like you have there, excuse me, they're not, No question, they're frightened. They don't want to get on the U.S.'s bad side. They're having trouble to begin with. Again, if they don't go along with this, they'll have sanctions put on them too. The U.S. can get its, you know, potatoes or whatever, you know, domestically. They don't need these places. They're trading with these places to maintain relationships. But it would crush these countries if the U.S. decided to turn on them. So that makes a lot of sense out of that. It's, you know, it would be really hard for anybody to say no to the U.S. down there.
They're just doing as they're told. Well, we've got one final quote here, which really does have parallels to what's being said in America at the moment about Russia meddling in American elections. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has ordered a revision of diplomatic relations with the U.S. after the White House has openly urged the opposition to unite and overthrow the dictator with no legitimate claim to power. Ahead of the mass street protests against Maduro on Wednesday, called by the opposition-led National Assembly, U.S. Vice President Mike Pence released a video message reaffirming unwavering support for a regime change in Venezuela, denouncing Maduro as a dictator with no legitimate claim to power who has never won the presidency in a free and fair election. Pence declared that time has come for the Venezuelan people to take the matters into their own hands, in a speech peppered with Spanish phrases. The United States supports the courageous decision by Juan Guaido, the president of the National Assembly, to assert that body's constitutional powers, declare Maduro a usurper, and call for the establishment of a transitional government, Pence said, slamming the speech as shameless U.S. meddling in his country's internal affairs. Maduro, in response, promised his supporters to announce specific measures against Washington in the coming hours. Enough of aggressions and conspiracies. Enough is enough, said Maduro, rejecting the imperialist interventionism and open calls for coup d'etat that he called unprecedented in the 200-year history of U.S.-Venezuela relations. Mr. Pence doesn't have a job. Now he wants to come and run Venezuela, handing out instructions on what should happen. As the anti-government protests on Wednesday, Vice President Delcy Rodriguez noted, accusing the White House of openly promoting instability and violence in the Latin American country. I mean, how can America talk about Russia meddling in America's elections when you've got Mike Pence urging the people to rise up and take down the legitimately elected president of Venezuela? It's just unbelievable hypocrisy here, Matt.
Well, Maduro was Chavez's minister of interior, minister of defense, and foreign minister for a while. So he's closely associated with Chavez. And Chavez is one of the most popular politicians in Venezuelan history. So the guy's popular. Because it's the biggest party in the legislature, there's no doubt he's going to have a lot of support nationally. He won like 52%, 53%, something like that. So if they're going to fake an election, they're going to make it be 60, 70%, not 51. So, because of his presence in the legislature being so large, clearly it's a popular party, and this is Chavez's party. So he's a popular guy. Unfortunately, the press, which is owned by most of it's owned by foreigners, is saying that these economic crises are because of Maduro. Somehow, the policies that had the economy go through the roof, five, 7 years ago are the exact same policies that are destroying the economy today, because he hasn't changed anything. So that's what's happening there. And so support is ebbing away from him, unfortunately, because of the press.
So he's basically the golden boy. He was the one that Chavez nominated to take power after him. He's made no changes. So really, I don't think the Venezuelan people are going to fall for this. I just hope it doesn't turn into another serious situation where it just drags on for years and years with lots of people killing one another. At least there aren't any Muslim extremists involved for the time being. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.